So let's get started. And, you know, I've been reading your work for at least a couple years and have so enjoyed your writing and your voice and just your perspective. So I'm especially curious to learn a little bit about where your love of movies, which comes through in your writing, where it comes from.
What's funny with me and criticism and my love of film and television as well is that I did not grow up obsessed with these mediums.
Yeah.
It was just something that it was something I definitely really enjoyed. I have very distinct memories of growing up with my mom braiding my hair, and we'd be watching things like The X-Files or Tales from the Crypt. I was also a very big Hellraiser fan at a very young age.
Wow.
And I don't know why my mother let me watch a movie which is basically about BDSM demons, but somehow I got really into that movie. So I was really into, like rewatching it as an adult. I'm like, this explains a lot.
Exactly. Explains a lot of things that I'm into.
Yeah, I was like, now it all makes sense. You know, I loved science fiction. I loved horror. But I was never really obsessed with movies themselves and how they were made. But I did end up going to an art school in Miami, Design and Architecture Senior High School. And they at that school, you take extra fine art classes, art history class, and you also pretty much have a major. And I wasn't really sure what to do, so I was like, oh, I'll do film. Sure, why not? And within like the first few weeks of that class, we ended up watching three movies that really changed my life. And that was The Sting with Paul Newman, as well as To Have and Have Not, which has Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall.
Yeah.
And then the final film was The Third Man, which is, I think, Orson Welles' best performance and just an amazing noir. And from that moment onward, I got really obsessed with how films were made, who made them, and just the historical context in which they were made. I thought at first I'd be a screenwriter. Then I realized, I have control issues. This is not going to work. And I don't want to move to L.A.
Yes.
So in college, I studied screenwriting, but I took a few critical classes, some criticism classes, including one that was entirely on Bette Davis.
Oh.
Yeah. And from then on, I kind of had it in the back of my head that maybe I should do criticism. And after kind of, can I curse? I
oh,
didn't
yeah.
ask that.
You can
okay,
curse
well,
away. I encourage it.
Oh, I love that. Okay. So after fucking around after college and not really doing much of anything besides, you know, paying bills and dating very terrible people, my college mentor basically gave me a come to Jesus talk. And he was like, you're too good of a writer to not be writing. So you need to either commit to screenwriting or commit to criticism, but you need to commit to something. And so I decided to commit to criticism, and it's been a very strange love affair ever since.
Wow. That is epic.
Yeah, I guess.
So I'd like to take you back in time for a second.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're going to go on a journey together, my friend.
Oh, Lord.
Basically, to take you back to the first time that you saw Now Voyager. And I want to have you close your eyes and really think back to that moment that you first saw it, how old you were, where you were, how it made you feel. And I'll chime in when those 10 seconds are up.
Oh, man, the first time I saw Now Voyager was probably in my late teens, the summer before I went to college. I was already getting really interested in Bette Davis, but I think I came to that film of hers a little later in my obsession, which was a very fraught time in my life because I wasn't sure I'd be able to go to college.
Hmm. Wow. So, hold on. Did you say how old you were at the time?
I must have been 17, 18.
17, 18. You know. So that's a pivotal time in your life. Like, that's a moment of real transition. And you saw this movie. How did it make you feel that first time that you saw it?
It made me feel seen. That's the best way I can put it. I just rarely see characters on screen that I feel reflect my emotional reality. And watching Bette Davis specifically in that role was sort of a life-changing experience.
Mm. Yeah, I know you've written that Now Voyager saved your life. And you've said that that is largely because it's one of the few films that you've seen that centers on the interior life of a woman. In this case, it's Charlotte, played by Bette Davis, and she's dealing with mental illness. What I find so fascinating about the portrayal in the film is that she's not defined by her mental illness, right? And that it's very hopeful. And this was actually my first time watching Now Voyager, and I'm so grateful to you for picking it because I feel like it's this remarkable gift of a film that I just never knew existed. It's so ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. Considering it's made in 1942, I mean, I think about the movies that are made today, and I don't think we have characters like Charlotte portrayed with the complexity, humanity, and fullness that she is portrayed with.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, I'm a huge Bette Davis fan. Actually, when I was in high school, and I think just getting really obsessed with her, and this was even before I watched Now Voyager, I actually thought that I may have been the reincarnated version of Bette Davis because she died the year I was born.
Whoa.
And I was like, we're both kind of intense women with weird mother issues. So I was like, oh, of course, I'm the reincarnated Bette Davis. This makes a lot of sense. I don't necessarily believe that now, but that would be awesome if I found that out. she's just Bette, gosh, just a goddess to me, just a sort of beacon of light, because she played a lot of characters who I think in different hands would not have the fullness that she grants her characters. Mm. And she was also an actress who in many ways was an auteur and took a lot of control over the films that she was in, much to the anger of Jack Warner and any director or producer she had to work with. Mm. She was kind of known for having these legal pads and like making notes about the script and deciding to change things and pretty much kind of taking the reins of things, which obviously caused her issues in her career because men very rarely want to cede their power to women.
No kidding. What was it about the character she played in Now Voyager, the character of Charlotte, that really struck a chord for you?
What really struck a chord for me was probably a mix of her anxiety and just how she portrayed it was something that I just really connected with and thought was really beautiful and layered and moving without making what she was dealing with a joke or a spectacle. Mm. And it was also the scenes involving her mother, Mrs. Vale, played by Gladys Cooper, if memory serves. And I have a very fraught but very close relationship with my own mother. And I had never seen a mother-daughter relationship on screen that really captured that sort of complexity of loving someone who's also controlling you and emotionally abusing you, because it is actually a very emotionally abusive relationship and a very controlling one. And it was just something that was just very startling to sort of see myself in the last place I'd expect, which is a 1942 film with all white people. And they're all like rich Bostonians. So, which is just striking. And just, it's a movie that I have watched endless times. I've kind of lost count. It's probably one of the movies I've seen the most.
Hmm. Yeah, I love one of the things you talk about in your really beautiful piece that you wrote for Vulture about Now Voyager is how the character of the therapist, how do you pronounce it? Is it Dr. Jacquith? Played by, exactly, one of those works, played by Claude Rains, how he treats Charlotte. You talk about how, you know, He forgoes the usual Freudian touches, you write, that defined cinematic representations of such doctors at the time, focusing instead on ideas of self-acceptance. I mean, talk to me a little bit about why that was such an important thing in this movie and at the time.
Well, I'm someone who deals with mental illness. I'm diagnosed bipolar type 2, and I have been in therapy since I was about 13 years old. So I've kind of come across a lot of different therapists. And so that means I have a certain view of how therapists and psychiatrists are portrayed on screen. Usually it doesn't really capture the essence of that sort of relationship, especially a healthy version of it.
Yeah.
And what I like about Claude Rains' portrayal is just like, it's blistering with empathy.
Yeah.
He obviously cares about this woman and wants to see her do better. And it's thankfully free of a lot of annoying jargon. And it's kind of funny watching how he relates to Charlotte. And now that I'm in a different form of therapy called DBT, I can kind of see strains of it within his character, because it's all about self-acceptance and sort of knowing how to kind of change your thoughts about how you speak to people and mindfulness. And Charlotte becomes very mindful of the world in a very different way after dealing with his therapy, because typically, you know, how you were introduced to her, she's someone who lives very much in her own world and kind of, you know,
isolated.
Very isolated, hides so much of herself from the world because she's afraid and anxious and depressed. And so that arc is just really interesting. And it's just interesting, you know, placing it within that time in Hollywood where, yeah, a lot of the psychiatrists you see on screen were very into Freudian techniques, which aren't always good for women, let's be honest. Freud had some issues. Like penis envy, really? Yeah, no, I'm good. And usually they're not placed in a romantic drama.
Yeah.
You don't usually find them in romantic dramas. Where you find them is like a noir or a suspense film, like something like Spellbound that, you know, Hitchcock did. So it just places psychiatry in such a different context, and within the context of a subgenre known as women's pictures, which were all about the interior lives of very thorny, sometimes very angry women who were not easy to categorize. So by just placing it in that genre, you're going to get kind of a different view on psychiatry, which is one that I think we don't really get to see such beautiful portrayals of that. Usually psychiatrists are like crossing lines, and when you see them in films and TV, usually they're like sleeping with people that they're supposed to be taking care of, which I always think is weird. Like, I do not know anyone who has ever like had some weird line crossing dynamic with their therapist. I mean, I know it exists, but it's just like very common.
Trope, clearly, that's explored.
It's gross trope.
Well, and I think because of the way that he treats her, which is as a human being, right? And he's the first person to point out to her that the way that her mother treats her is not right. And that, you know, it's not fair, and that it's largely to do with how she feels about herself and her confidence. And he helps her overcome that. And I think you talk about in your piece in Vulture that it shows the possibility of overcoming traumas and not being consumed by them. I love that idea, because that's what Charlotte really shows us in the film.
Yeah, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, partially because a few days after that piece was published at Vulture, I was institutionalized after a suicide attempt. So I've been revisiting the film a lot, especially as I'm in recovery, and sort of thinking about what is the narrative I've written of my life, and maybe it needs some rewriting, which is something Charlotte deals with, because she has to rewrite how she's sort of seen the world. And with her, it's even more so her rewriting the narratives people have handed to her, and that she's become gone on to believe, specifically how her mother has really shaped her understanding of herself, her sexuality. Class dynamics are really interesting in the movie. It's very fascinating. Richly textured, beautiful film that, you know, I've seen it countless times, and I still discover something new about the performances or how it's shot. It just always astounds me.
You know, one of the things that really struck me seeing it for the first time yesterday, it was just really remarkable to me, again, considering that this movie was made in 1942, is the way that love is portrayed in Charlotte's life. Like, it's not just in the form of a romance between her and Jerry. It's bigger than that. And it's about the love for herself, but it's also about the love that she finds through caring for his daughter, Tina. And, you know, I was watching the movie. I'm like, oh, my God, Charlotte is Tina. Tina is Charlotte. I had that moment.
Yes, totally.
But, I mean, I love the scene where we see the letter that Jerry has written to Tina. This is after he's fallen in love with Charlotte on that cruise. And he says, "Dear Tina, I was sorry to see you in tears when I left, but Daddy understood. You were crying because you were being left alone. But today I made a discovery. All people are alone in some ways, and some people are alone in all ways. Even after someone has grown up, she can be alone." I mean, it's just such a beautiful, insightful observation. And
it is.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me that this was in this movie. Like, this movie has so many layers.
It does.
And the fact that Charlotte and Jerry don't end up together at the end was shocking to me. I totally expected
it. Yeah, you do expect it because that's right. She's done everything you think she needs to do to get the dude. And that's usually, you know, what you're sort of expecting. I think a lot of people have sort of interesting expectations about classic Hollywood films and how they portray romance, that if you start to actually go through this time period, there's a lot of really interesting things happening, a lot of subversion that's just absolutely fascinating. I think one thing, Janine Bassinger, who is a film historian, who's written a lot about women's pictures and actresses such as Bette Davis, she observed that within this genre, you know, it allowed women at the time to exist in ways they couldn't in their own life. Mm. And that's why it was so popular and it made so much money, because they could place themselves into the center of a story where their desires and their complexities were acknowledged, and they could look very fabulous, or, you know, imagine yourself looking fabulous because there's lots of great costuming in movies like Now
or having
Voyager.
That great transformation that Charlotte has in the movie, right? From ugly duckling to bombshell.
Yeah, she looks amazing. And when you see her first transformed, you're like, damn, what?
Exactly.
Yeah, I need to get my eyebrows done too. That's how? Oh, okay, man. Eyebrows.
That's
really
the key. Just get your eyebrows done.
Eyebrows, people. The frame for the face. That's what this movie teaches.
So seeing that transformation, even if they're not seeing it in their own lives, was so important for women at the time, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and they got to, you know, vicariously kind of fuck up and fuck around in ways they couldn't in real life, you know, which is part of why the genre endures. And women's pictures are kind of a curious subgenre that ended up sort of dissipating once the original studio system in classic Hollywood fell apart, which I don't think is an accident. I think what happened was the studios going forward, for complex reasons, no longer looked at women as an audience worth marketing stuff to directly. Mm. And that's why we are where we are. And so there's occasionally, I think, works, especially on television, that feel like they're very much echoing what the women's picture did. Mm. Because it did have very specific visual and narrative cues, including these usually beautiful transformations for these women involving, like, ridiculously amazing clothing, maybe a haircut, and a consideration of gender and sexual politics in a way that can be a little thorny and fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so we get that, you know, today occasionally, but I don't think there's been a full movement to bring it back, although I hope so, because women's pictures, I mean, you know, it's a subgenre, so a lot of times you could see it spliced into, say, a noir or sometimes a Western, you know, like women's pictures were really fascinating. I think Now Voyager is kind of the crowning jewel of the genre because it ends on such a note of complexity and every character feels so well formed and it just really understands the setting and the character's psychology in a way that's very surprising. It's also beautifully constructed, you know, it's a very spellbinding film.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned the complexity because it's so true. I feel like there's so much depth to the writing in the film and the characters as a result of that writing. Like, there's a line that I love that Charlotte says to Jeffrey, to take is sometimes a way to give, the most beautiful way in the world if people love each other. And, you know, that's when they're talking about the fact that they can't be together. You know, he's married. Yeah. He has a family. I mean, he lives in another country. there's a lot of obstacles. But they both acknowledge that they love each other, but that's going to be enough. And I just wonder, what are the scenes or the lines, the moments in the movie that you love, that you always go back to?
One of my favorite scenes is when we get that flashback to how Charlotte was before her mother really kind of came down on her, where she's, you know, obviously an adolescent and still and, you know, very shy about her sexuality, but curious as anybody, you know, with any sexual desire would be. And a lot of stuff seems to happen on ships with this movie.
Totally. And this the only place that sex can happen, apparently, is on a ship.
apparently. And, you know, she ends up talking to a guy, and unfortunately her mother puts a stop to that and really, you know, starts to control her going forward. And I think there's something really beautiful about that sequence of scenes. I also love, you know, the scenes as you start to see her getting to know Jerry a little bit better.
Yeah.
I think that's really fascinating. And also, one of my favorite scenes is actually the very beginning of the film, in which Claude Rains' character enters the Vail home, you know, under the pretense of getting to know Charlotte, but it's obviously like some little diagnostic tool he's doing. And he goes into her room and he's like looking over her things, but she can kind of tell what he's doing. And it's just this very interesting push and pull. And, you know, Claude Rains is one of the best actors to ever be on screen. Like, man, that guy is amazing. And him and Bette Davis actually did a lot of work together going forward. And there's actually another movie in which Claude Rains, Bette Davis, and Paul Heinrich, who plays Jerry, are all in, and it's completely different than Now Voyager. It's this really like fucked up love triangle. It is.
Tell me that it's Claude Rains and Jerry. What's the actress that you said? I wish they were together.
Oh my god, that'd be great. But it's like Bette is with Paul Heinrich in this movie called Deception, which came out like maybe like 2 years after Now Voyager. It was not a success, but I actually love it. Oh my god, and Claude Rains is a complete asshole. It's very different dynamic, but it's fun seeing these kind of character, these actors play off each other. And so I think Claude Rains and Bette Davis kind of getting to know each other and the sort of push and pull that happens lends the film just a really interesting texture and lends it some of its best moments. You know, I just love seeing how proud he obviously is of how far Charlotte has come. And, you know, I love that Charlotte, you know, the ending is also amazing because it's like, you know, you get a really good last line. Let's not, you know, ask for the moon. We have the stars. It's like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. I love it. And I love that Charlotte's also using her immense fortune because her mom died, thankfully. Spoilers. Like, sorry,
thank
y'all.
Thank God.
But, you know, thankfully her mom died. So now she has this immense fortune and she's actually using it for good to help Dr. Jackweath and his, you know, his whole practice and giving them funds to have more land and all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, that's awesome. That's what rich people should do, is use their money to help others. And she's going to help others when it comes to psychiatric care. And that's also why I like it, because I think that's an important aspect of the movie, is the very interesting class dynamics.
Yeah, and I love that you bring up the relationship she has with her therapist, with Dr. Jackweath. God, I can't say this name.
I always mispronounce it, and I've seen this movie like 50 times. So,
okay, that makes me feel better. Because, like, he treats her as an equal, right? He thinks that she's just as intelligent as he is, and it's very clear in the way that they talk to each other. They almost speak to each other as colleagues, not as a therapist-patient.
Yeah, which is... the film does it really well, because it easily could have made it so friendly that it's like, that makes it kind of weird, because there is some sort of differential where he has to make, you know, he's trying to make sure that she becomes healthy, you know.
Yeah.
But there is a familiarity that kind of builds between them and makes their relationship very richly textured and just really beautiful and heartwarming. It's a film that even if it doesn't end with the sort of happily ever after you'd expect, there is such hope and happiness to it. And I'm sure, you know, Charlotte's going to get plenty of dudes in the future.
Oh,
she's banging.
She's never going to get married, but she's going to have a lot of lovers.
I know, and I kind of love that. I want
female
characters who don't get married but have a lot of lovers. Or, you know, actually, I find spinster characters interesting. So women who just, like, never get married but just live in their lives, those characters are always really fascinating to me.
I agree. So you talked about how you've seen this movie, you know, a ton of times, and it's kind of changed along with you depending on where you are in your life. And so I just wonder if you'd talk about that, how it's changed as you've gotten older, the more you've watched it, and how you've grown together.
Well, I mean, when I first saw it in my late teens, I had no romantic history. So it's been fascinating, you know, as I've gotten older, I appreciate the romance for how it ends more than I did originally. It kind of upset me when I first watched it. And I was like, wait, they don't get together after all of this? You've got to be kidding me. But now I look at it as that is such a healthy way to approach things.
It is like, so healthy. Wow. I just think about, I look at both of them and I thought, that's so mature.
Yeah, I was like, huh. Wow, I would not have done that. That yeah, it's so mature. Because I would have still been banging Jerry, but that's why I'm not a role model. So that's one aspect that's really changed. And another aspect is sort of paying closer attention to the dynamic Charlotte has with Tina, who, Jerry's daughter.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing how... you know, who I connected with most in the film sort of shifts over time. Charlotte, I always connect with her, but there is a stretch of time where Tina, I don't know, I was just really drawn to this just very vulnerable girl who couldn't see herself very clearly and really needed someone. And Charlotte became that person she really needed, a mother figure like she never had before. And I really liked their sort of dynamic, which is sort of mother-daughtery, mentor-mentee. Another huge aspect of the film that changed for me, especially in recent months since my last hospitalization, has been really considering what is the story of my life? Mm. How am I writing it? What is the narrative that I am living out? And really questioning a lot of my own beliefs about who I am and what I'm going for in ways that I haven't before. And the film has really influenced that. So that's, like, I think how it's changed for me most dramatically over the years.
Mm. That's really beautiful. Is there anything else you'd like to say about Now Voyager that I haven't asked you or that you just want to add to?
I just want to add a bit about Bette Davis. Because anytime you get a chance to talk about Bette, my fellow Aries and badass and just, oh, God, that woman. That woman did what we need in Hollywood today. That woman cared so much about her work as an artist and the quality of the films that she worked in. She was so interested in showing different sides of womanhood that we don't usually get to see with such humanity. Hmm. She could play some nasty characters. And in Now Voyager, she's not nasty. She's definitely very sympathetic. But she definitely has a skill of lending humanity to whoever she played. And her acting in this film, you know, obviously there is a physical transformation in terms of, you know, how she's dressed. But it's not just that. It's how she moves after the transformation that I'm always struck by. She just seems, her body language is just so much more open and direct. And there's just something very inspiring about a woman who takes control of her own life. And that's the message I hope people kind of leave with the film, is that that's possible.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for choosing this movie and giving me the gift of watching it, because I really do feel like it's a gift. It's amazing.
Oh, you're very welcome. Watch more Bette Davis. She's a queen.
I need to do a film festival with her. I mean, I've seen some, but this was one I never had seen before and found so remarkable. I also can't believe so many people don't like it. It's such a good movie.
A lot of people like to kind of call it a weepy, and it's just like, oh, this sad little romance. And I'm like, no, this is actually one of the richest portraits of mental illness we've ever had in American film. And y'all need to come correct and speak respect on Bette Davis's name, or I will find you, because she's my girl.
I completely agree. I will back you up on that.
Yes, someone in my fight.
Exactly. Thank you so much. And just thank you for your voice and for your writing, which is so beautiful.
Oh, thank you for talking with me today about Now Voyager. I don't always get the opportunity to talk about such old films, so this was wonderful.
Oh, I appreciate it. All right, well, have a good rest of the day, and I just look forward to reading what you write next.